Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with Martina Myok, the playwright of Ironbound, which is at Roundhouse Theater as part of the Women's Voices Theater Fest. Martina, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, before we get started, give me a little of your backstory. You said you're from Poland, right? When did you come over here?
Yeah, I was. I came over when I was five. I was born in Poland. My whole family still back there. My mom lives in Jersey, so with my half-sister. We kind of had a long process of getting into the country. So I guess technically I was nine when we were able to stay, but I started the process when I was five. And then we moved to the area outside Newark, New Jersey. And I lived there for most of my life before I went over to Chicago. I live mostly in the South Side there, and now I'm in New York City. Or I'm in Queens, which is New York City, I guess, kind of.
Gotcha. Okay, so, so if you're based up there, obviously a great spot for theater. How did they rope you into, you know, this opportunity down here in D.C.?
Oh, it was awesome. It was super easy. Ironbound was originally a commission prize. So the NNPN, which obviously y'all know about, the National New Play Network, which is based in D.C., every year they give away the Smith Prize for political playwriting. And the first year that I applied, they switched it to, instead of someone submitting a play, you could just submit an idea. So I wrote this idea in March. I sent it off for the application, and I was like, I really like this idea. I think I'll still write it, either whether they give me the award or not. So that was in March, and in May they told me that I had won, and I was like, great, I'm done. Here's the play. I already wrote it. And the first part of that award was also getting to workshop it with any one of the NNP. Theaters, and so I decided to go over to Marin Theater Company, mostly because I wanted to go to San Francisco.
Selfish motives, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, it's February, and that's I would like to please to California. And they were actually at the very first reading. Jason and Margot from there were at the first reading, and so I went out to San Francisco to Marin, Mill Valley, and Ryan Roulette from Roundhouse just happened to be in the audience. He was out there. They were doing a co-production of Fetch Clay, Make Man, and so he just happened to be there and see the show, and we sort of, you know, kept in touch. And a couple months later, he took a train up to New York and pitched me the production, and I was like, yeah, man, especially because of the festival. It was especially highlighted because of the festival, Women's Voices Theater Festival.
Yeah. And we spoke with the director, Daniela, earlier.
Yeah.
She said that at that point, your agents kind of arranged a little bit of a theater-going date to make sure might be a good match for the play.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I came down and actually I saw Fetch Clay, which I thought they did a great job at. I thought the play was so good. I didn't get to see it in New York. And actually, one of the actors who was in that show is in Ironbound. So that was a great little matchmaking thing, too.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Tell us what the play's about.
Oh, I'll try. If only you
wrote it, you might be able to.
I know.
It.
I mean, that's what makes it so hard. You know, I feel like somebody can, from the outside.
You're thinking on it on like 47 different levels,
yeah,
and now
totally.
I'm asking you to say like the very superficial level right now.
But I'm trying to be like, oh, how do I sell it? And obviously, you know, like it's a weird little capitalist thing to do with art. You know.
Yeah. Well, give me the most basic synopsis of it, and then after that, we can do a little deeper mining of it.
So it's about a poor immigrant woman. She happens to be Polish, but I'm hoping that it can sort of stand in for most other experiences like this, whose life we watch over 20 years at a bus stop. We see her in 1992 when she's first coming over to the country. We see her in 2006, and we see her in present day. And it also tracks the three major romantic relationships that she has and the three presidencies that they happen to be in. And it's the bus stop is about a quarter mile away from a factory where she used to work in 92, and then what was closing in 2006, and what's, you know, totally just a bunch of rubble now. And so we're also tracking just sort of what happens to somebody who doesn't have a financial safety net, and some of the choices that she might have to make in order just to survive in America, given her socioeconomic situation. And I swear it's funny. I swear it is. Yeah, I think that's I think
what makes it funny is it the conversations they have at the bus stop or what?
Yeah, they never leave the bus. So this one the actress that plays the main character Daria, she never leaves the bus. She's on the bus stop. She's on stage the entire time until the very end of the play. I think the humor comes out of just like, I mean, just the dark humor that you develop when you've lived a really difficult life. I mean, I think it's impossible for somebody to live in complete tension their entire lives.
Right.
And so this, the perspective that somebody has on their lives is funny, I think, from the outside. Somebody can be joking about things that most people find devastating.
Right.
That sort of survival tactic of humor, I think, has helped make it a funny play.
Self-deprecating kind of.
Yeah. And like just calling things like just calling it how you see it. You know, like
right.
She's got no time for bullshit, and she's radio. You know, she's just like she calls it how she sees it.
Just like us on this interview, no time for BS, right?
Yeah.
Take me into your headspace of when the idea came to you, because it's a cool idea that we're gonna tell the whole story at a bus stop over time here. So were you sitting at a bus stop and thought? It or where, you know, do you remember when it actually came to you, the idea?
A couple of things I was working a job that was for sure taking advantage of me. It was paying me way too little for the work that they were wanting me to do, and I was doing a 4-hour commute one way. So I would in South Jersey. So I grew up in Jersey, but I was like kind of coming back to South Jersey, and I was there for half the week, and I was crashing on a cot in like some like random housing, and then I would take 3 trains back up to New Haven, where I had just finished grad school, and my then fiance, now husband, was finishing school. So I was definitely, I had a lot of time to think on the trains, waiting for the trains. And I did that job for about 10 months. So
what was the job?
Oh, I feel like I shouldn't say.
Well, you don't have to say the company, but maybe just the general line of work.
It was actually working for a theater. I was doing, I was like reading scripts and kind of their, was supposed to be their playwright, but I ended up actually being their kind of lit manager on demand. And so I was supposed to be writing plays, but I kind of didn't have any time because I was doing their lit managing work for very little money. And I just sort of felt a ceiling. I felt trapped. I didn't really know what else I could do after spending 3 years in grad school. I mean, I'm used to working part-time jobs, full-time jobs. I've been working since I was 14, but I think it hit me when I was like 28. So I was like, this just feels unfair to the amount of work I'm doing and how I'm being compensated. So all that, plus I was getting married, and I was getting married to somebody who does not come from wealth. Similarly, like me, I don't come from wealth. And, you know, I was scared. I was nervous. Like, who am I to think that I have the right to marry for love? You know, I don't have any sort of financial safety net. So what makes me think that I could do that?
Right.
An immigrant, a kid of an immigrant, you know, my mother was like, what are you doing?
Right.
So all these sorts of things. And then I guess that was all bubbling in my head. And when I sat down I wrote the play in a week. So when I finally sat down and just kind of like poured out, and it was the fastest I've ever written a play. I just stayed down there in New Jersey and just like gestated and gave birth to this play kind of pretty fast.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how much of your own immigrant experience is in this then? In the main character?
It's a lot of my mother's experience with my characteristics, I think. I think she's there's some details in it that are like permutations of my mother's experience. Three sort of men that she was involved with. She was a single mother for most of you know, even when she was married, she was sort of a single mother. That's the sort of the support that she got. And I used to judge her a lot for the choices that she made, because they endangered us sometimes. You know, they were just really unsafe.
Right.
And as I was about to get married myself, I started looking back at some of the choices that I had made, and I realized that they weren't that dissimilar from what she'd been doing. And I was like, oh no. So then that kind of helped me. I felt like I was, it's kind of a letter to my mom. Like, I see you, I hear you. I understand.
Tell me just along those very same lines, why it's important that you know, your creative work is very personal like that. In any line, it could be theater or screenwriting or whatever, or music. But why do you think does it breed kind of an authenticity, you think?
I think but what does authenticity mean? Like, I think that's something that like we constantly talk about in the theater is like what's authentic when you're like clearly they're not at an actual bus stop, you know.
Right,
like the
right,
theater
right.
is the most artificial art form, I guess, but it's also the most genuine one because you're having to create everything. You don't see it through somebody's own like sort of a Rorschach test of an audience experiencing a play. But I feel like probably what's why it's important to have for things to come from a personal place, at least for me, is I feel like the truth is stranger than fiction. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes we might there's just like very paradoxical behavior that I think we have as human beings, which if it doesn't come from a real place, it could be logicked kind of away. I feel like especially when you have actors in a room, you know, people are like, but why would somebody do this? And I'm like, well,
they did
I don't know, but they did it, you know, like they did a version of it. And so it's kind of, you know, it's easier to say, well, if that person did that thing, let's figure out, because, an actor will do crazy, crazy things. Like you look at the Shakespearean canon and they do pretty batshit stuff. I feel like everyone is capable of doing anything in given the certain circumstance. I mean, you know, look at just the history of the world. And so I think having an art come from a personal place, it makes you more willing to believe that we can actually do the things that we might not want to believe that we actually are capable of doing.
Totally, well put.
Thanks. It took me a minute, but I got there.
Oh yeah. Oh, I knew you were gonna come around to it.
Yes. Oh man, I'm sorry. I'll try to keep them shorter.
No. It was perfect. It was perfect. I give you the ball and you just take it and run with it. No, I love it. Just talk about the Women's Voices Theater Fest. How awesome of an opportunity is it for not only you, but some other, you know, let's say rising playwrights that maybe this is their big break to get one of their original premieres on stage?
Yeah. I mean, I think, as opposed to being like a lady festival, I mean, I think that most theaters get a lot of slack for their lack of diversity, right? Which just means not white men, you know, it's like the code.
Yeah.
And so when they do get that kind of, when they do get their hands smacked, oftentimes as penance, right, they'll do a reading or they'll do a workshop or something that doesn't actually, they don't put their money where their mouth is, basically, and actually put the thing on stage. And I think it came, you know, got to the situation with the gender disparity, I guess you could call it, and in the theater. Just got to a point where these theaters just putting their money where their mouths are, and that's a great message to sort of send out to the rest of us writing. I mean, I didn't know that women wrote plays until college. I figured that they sort of stopped, like plays. I thought that plays stopped being written after like Tennessee Williams and Arthur Miller died. Mm-hmm. I also went to public school. I was like, you know, they put on like Mel Gibson to teach us Hamlet, and like
right.
Daniel Day-Lewis to do The Crucible, and that was kind of our theater education. But I mean, I think the exposure is really important too. When Ryan first pitched this idea of the Women's Voices Theater Festival, obviously, you know, this is the biggest of its kind in the world. So I was like, what is this exactly? You're going to do a bunch of readings? He's like, no, they're going to produce the plays. 50 theaters are going to produce 50, or I think it's more now, 50 plays with female playwrights in their season. And I was like, oh, that's so great. In your season, it has to be part of your subscription. But then I was like, wait, this is all happening in the same month and a half? And I was like, oh, this is just like Women's History Month. Like, you give us the shortest month of the year, and, like, you do all at the same time. But then I was like, how is everyone going to see all these plays?
Right.
I felt like it was, like, counterproductive. But then as, like, the conversation kept going in just, like, the theater world about what to do with all these seasons that are programming such similar seasons of like just lacking diversity, I started thinking about this festival, and I was like, one of the issues originally was, well, we'd love to program lady playwrights, but we just can't find them. And I was thinking of this festival, and I was like, well, there are so many female playwrights in DC that we actually can't see them all. This festival is so full of lady playwrights. Please take your pick. They're all here. So I think it's great in that way. Even if everyone doesn't see all the plays, they're here. They're here, and you can find them, and those playwrights will keep writing plays. So hopefully it's going to be a good thing that starts a fire.
Definitely. And just before we go, you know, just talk a little bit about what it's been like working at Roundhouse specifically.
Oh, it's been great. Everyone's been super supportive, and the cast is really, really great. We've got two people from New York, and then two local actors, and it's been wonderful. It's kind of like whatever we've needed, they've given. And actually, I was really impressed with the DC theater community on the day that we had that. Women's Voices party. I think Daniela probably talked to you about it because she was just really impressed with how supportive it was of each other. I think it was great. Like, it reminded me of Chicago, that was the most supportive community of theater makers that I've been in. And I was, just, I guess I was relieved to know that that is, that also exists somewhere else. So I've been impressed with DC for a lot too, in addition to Roundhouse.
Definitely. Were you at that event? Were you able to speak with Lisa Krohn at all?
Oh, actually, Lisa was my teacher at Yale School of Drama, and
really?
She's mentoring my musical. I'm writing a musical about Chernobyl, and so
Whoa.
She's been. Yeah, I swear it's funny.
Wow, yeah, that's your new tagline. I swear
I know,
it's funny.
The number of times.
You can run with that. That can be like a branding thing. Seriously,
my yoke. I swear it's funny. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she's been super great. She's so smart with on all the things. So yeah, I saw her a little bit, and it's a gypsy punk Slavic folk musical about Chernobyl. I swear it's funny. So maybe if it's not going to be like Les Mis. yeah, she's awesome.
Awesome, but you got to catch up when she was here at the event.
Yeah. She was mentoring me before she won the Tony, and then afterwards I was like, oh man, you're never going to answer my emails now.
Yeah,
too busy.
The dynamic changed
for a second.
Slightly different dynamic after.
Yeah, I just don't see her as much anymore. I was like, we can just catch a drink now. And I'm like, now people like go up to her and,
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you knew her when.
And yeah, that's right.
And
I
vice versa.
She was pretty far along when I knew her too, so
yeah.
So not much that I was doing.
Exactly. Awesome. No, hey, it was a pleasure meeting you, and thanks so
you
much
too.
for taking the time, and best of luck with the show, and
Thank you.
We'll try to get out and see it, okay?
Thank you, and thanks for talking to me.
All right, anytime.
Yeah, bye.